In the Garage, our weekly podcast here at WCSX. Thanks for following us along on Apple as well. Always open up the doors to the garage with Doors music. And our special guest this morning, Scott Pollard from Survivor, NBA star. Just a cool dude, man. Are you down with the Doors?
I like the Doors. Yeah, it's old school rock and roll. I'm an old school rock and roll kind of guy.
You definitely are. We're going to get into that, by the way. So the garage, for folks who don't know, this is kind of where we hang out. We'll talk automotive. We'll talk pop culture stuff. Obviously, we're going to talk about Survivor with Scott in this season, which was awesome, and we'll get into that. But I really wanted to start off talking about cars because I found this clip. I'm going to see if I can play this down the line to you. Here you go, Scott. See if you remember this.
Pollard is quite proud of his 69 caddy he calls Marvin.
This is Marvin. Black hood, green armor, hence the name for all you car thieves. Take one look at this car and think, not worth my time.
What a piece you had, but what a cool character car, Marvin the 69 Cadillac, man.
Oh, that was my POS from college, man. That thing was, it was a beast. I tried my best. It was actually a 69 Coupe de Ville convertible, and I tried my best to restore it because that's the same make and model that Boss Hogg drove in the
Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah. Show.
And I just because I had the car, it wasn't like I was a ginormous fan of Dukes of Hazzard. I did enjoy the show when I was growing up, but but anyway, I painted that thing white, got all the body work done on it, put some bullhorns on it, had custom license plates from Kansas that said Boss Hogg on it. And I took it out to California, and I got it in Kansas. So it was a Midwest car. It was a rust bucket. That's why it had a different colored hood. The original hood was so rusted, they replaced it with a black hood. That's why I called it Marvin the Martian, because it had a black face and green body. I took it to a guy in California that I trusted in the Sacramento area, and he was like, if I was you, I'd never drive this car again. It's going to hit a speed bump and really literally fall apart. He said, it is a dangerous car to drive. And I was like, what? After all the body work I had done, nobody said anything. So anyway, I donated it to a younger kid for parts that was helping to work on it, and I ended up, I mean, we can go on for a long time about cars.
You have some great rides. I mean, I've seen some of the photos, Scott. And for folks who don't know, Scott Pollard, you're 6'11". So for you, even growing up, it wasn't like you're hopping in a Vega or somebody's small car. You couldn't fit probably in high school.
No, and that was the thing is my first car was a 72 Caddy that my dad just let me drive. And then I went from that to another one that I bought. That was a Sedan DeVille, the first one. And then I got a Fleetwood. My dad passed away. I sold that car. I moved up to the state of Washington. I bought a Fleetwood 72, same year. And then I sold that one after I graduated high school because I needed money for college. And then, so I kind of started with a love affair of Cadillacs because they have all that room inside, those old ones.
Oh, yeah.
Not new ones, but those old Cadillacs. I wasn't about to try to drive a, back then the Yugos were popular. Kids nowadays are like, what's a Yugo?
It was, wasn't it at the time? It was the worst car ever built.
It was one of them, yeah. It was up there. But, those compact cars, they don't work. I'm too big. Obviously, if necessity were ever the other of my decision-making, then, yeah, you go with a smaller car, but luckily, I'm able to scrape up enough money together to get a little bit bigger car, and so that's what I do.
True story. I was I grew up in Southern California, and I remember going to we got invited to a Lakers game. I was in high school, and I had a 74 Vega, just a POS, but it was mine. So we drive from Corona to Inglewood, so here we are coming from the Valley to Inglewood to a Lakers game, and this is like 82, 83. We come pulling up, and we had Senate seats. A friend of my uncle's was the guy who owned Carl's Jr., the whole restaurant chain. So we had no business being in these like rich people seats anyway. And we pull up in this just piece of crap. So we drive up and they're checking our ID and checking the tickets like 80 times. And Jabbar is behind us in a Rolls Royce and they've got the seat back like 3 feet. And we're watching him. Looks like a spider coming out of the car. And we're just standing there watching him stand up like, how did he get in that car? But I just remember thinking like, if you're a big guy, man, as big as you guys are, you don't have a lot of options.
No, it's definitely not for size again. If you can afford it, because it's like shoes, if you can afford the nicer shoes, then you have to pay more to get them in your size. And it's the same thing with everything, really. I mean, flying commercial, if I'm going to fly, I try not to fly coach because it's hard. It's almost impossible, and it's no fun for the people I have to sit next to. So, yeah, same thing with cars. You know, you're limited on options, and sometimes you can afford to get a bigger car, and sometimes you can't. You know, I've got family members that are my size or bigger, and, you know, and some of us can afford a bigger car, and some of us just kind of have to fold into a smaller car.
So I was going to ask you about TV movie cars, but you kind of answered that at the beginning of the podcast here, talking about the Dukes of Hazzard and the Boss Hogg. I would assume, like, you being a bigger guy, you always look at, like, maybe the A-Team van. Would that have been one of those cars you'd want to get your hands on?
I was also a fan of the A-Team growing up. I'm aging myself here. I'm an A-Team fan, Dukes of Hazzard fan, Chips fan.
Yeah.
You know, those classic shows. But the A-Team van with no windows on the back, there's too many negative connotations. I mean, if it was the actual A-Team van, then it's cool. But if you're just driving around a windowless van, people are going to kind of question your character.
Never thought of it. You might as well sell ice cream out of it because you're halfway to being the creepiest dude in the neighborhood.
You know, just driving through a school zone, saying, waving at the kids. That's not okay.
No. Now, you see, the one that I always liked was, and this is kind of obscure, there was a show called Hardcastle and McCormick. It was only on for a couple. That coyote, that car that he drove, that kit car, it looked like it was going to fall apart. You were talking about your caddy falling apart. It shook every time he drove it, but you're like, man, what a badass car. I want that.
yeah. So, but no, not the A-Team van. But maybe nowadays, maybe a conversion van, something a little bit more family friendly. Because I got a litter going. So.
How many kids you got?
Well, I have three with my first marriage, and then now my wife is going to actually deliver on Friday. The little boy will not turn; he's breech. And I learned this. I didn't know this because none of my other kids were breech, but I guess they will not even try to deliver a breech baby nowadays. There's just too many complications. So we had to schedule a C-section for Friday. So I'm going to be a dad for the fourth time on Friday.
Have you ever been there for a C-section?
I have not. I've got some friends that have told me, just keep up by your head. Don't look at the other part.
Dude, I'm 6'4", which is like a midget next to you. Our first son was born, and they said, do you want to see what's going on? I said, absolutely. And it was a C-section. I stood and went, oh, my God. It's like my wife from that point on, I'm like, if you blow your nose or use the bathroom with the door open, don't worry about it. I've seen everything. We're good. So, yeah, when you say you love somebody inside out, that's what it means when you get to see the C-section. So how's your family reacted to Survivor? Because I wanted to touch on this. I mean, getting voted off last week, but everybody knows. I hope everybody realizes that the editing that goes into these shows, the hours of video that they shoot to edit it down, there had to be moments where you're like, wow, that wasn't even a reaction to what that person said, and they put it in.
Well, the people that were there know, because you see certain reactions and you see the situation and you go, well, that reaction was to a completely different time. And it's not always the case. It's not completely fabricated. So I am not saying that it's all the edit that blah, blah, blah. But what I will say is that within the framework of your daily life, you have happy moments, you have sad moments, you get pissed at stuff, you get happy at things, and everybody does that. And you can choose, as an editor from these thousands of hours of footage, to weave a storyline within the framework of what actually happens. I stand by my actions and my behavior on the show, absolutely, but it is a television show. It is for entertainment. Is it going to be as exciting to watch Survivor if everybody gets along and we're all holding hands and singing songs together? No, it's not. It's a show that is about backstabbing and about drama and about heroes and about villains and about the pretty girls and the good-looking dudes. And, you know, I'm neither one of those things. So they had to make me into something. So I'm not going to be the hero. I'm not going to be the good-looking dude. I don't think I'm arrogant enough to play the cocky guy like Nick Marirano on our season. He's a great guy, but, you know, it was pretty easy to weld him into the arrogant guy that is so self-centered and all that kind of stuff. It's easy to paint the girls in, you know, into categories of the really, really smart one, and then the one that plays on her looks, and the one that's cute, and then there's the crazy older one, you know. So we all fit a character, but it certainly helped along with some editing. So you do see some things that you go, huh, that didn't happen exactly like that, but okay, you know, because you're watching yourself on TV going, am I really going to be upset that I'm on national TV right now? No, you signed up for it. You signed up for a reality TV show. The question I have in my mind is for certain characters that have been on the show, to take it personal and to go into like, oh my gosh, I really hate that person in real life. It's like, whoa, easy.
So are you expecting when you go to when they announce the final vote and they do the live show, are you expecting blowback from anybody?
There's a couple people. Actually, a few of the cast members have told me that there's a character that's going to supposedly give me the business in person at the finale. But I'm not going to give that person any credibility or even recognize who it is. But, you know, the one thing I do know and I have faith in is that Jeff isn't going to let his show turn into a sideshow. The live finale, this is Jeff's baby and he protects his baby very well. And as he should, 32 seasons strong. And I know they're doing at least 33 and 34. So that is not going to happen. He is not going to let one of his cast members go at another cast member and make it about them. This show is about all of us. This season is about all of us that we're on the island. And, of course, when, you know, now that I'm out of it, I can say, of course, I believe the finale should be about the winner. It's that person that won. Let's talk about them and their story. The rest of us are all losers. We all tied for second, which sucks. But that's the reality. So let's talk about the winner. Make that show about the winner and the rest of our drama or sideshows that anybody has any personal beliefs, that's just completely unimportant.
So I had a couple things for you. Teresa on Twitter asked a question. What was the funniest challenge for you because of your height?
Funniest. I don't know. The crucifixion was pretty funny. I mean, we had our hands up over behind our head. And I mean, it wasn't funny, but I looked at it and I just said, Jeff, really? Come on. I weigh 100 pounds more than the next heaviest contestant. And I'm 200 pounds more than a couple of them. And we're all supposed to stand on the same size little fraction of wood with our heels and our arms up behind our back on, you know, it's not a crucifixion, but I exaggerate. But, you know, with our arms up behind our head. And
right.
And fair equally on that. That's a challenge. It's equal for everybody because you measured it and you put my handles up higher. Thanks. Yeah, so I thought that was funny to me, but it was like a sarcastic funny.
Yeah, your feet looked like there was no way they're going to fit on there. And then Brian wanted to know, anybody naked at any point during the show?
Not that I recall. I don't recall seeing anybody naked, and I'm pretty glad about that. Maybe if I was in my mid-20s and I was miserable in my real life and I was going on a show to see somebody naked, maybe it would have been something that had been more appealing to me. But in my stage of life and my position in life, in my family and my marriage and all that kind of stuff, I wasn't looking to go on Survivor and see anybody naked. And thank goodness I don't recall seeing anybody naked. And, you know, I think a couple of the girls, their tops came down or whatever in some of the challenges. But, you know, I was busy working on the challenge or trying to win or whatever. So I don't recall seeing anything that wasn't on TV.
Is Ty as good a player as he seems to be, as what we're watching so far on Survivor?
Well, to this point, that is all I'm allowed to talk about.
Right.
Ty has, he's very good at, obviously, like America has fallen in love with him. People like Ty. People naturally enjoy Ty's, being around Ty. He's a very calm character. And he was a great provider on the island. He was always finding things to eat. And so when I got after the merge after the swap and I got onto the island with Ty, I formed a bond with him very, very quickly because I was doing my best to bring food to the table on the Braun Island early. But what we didn't have was any fishing gear or snorkel or anything to go get stuff out of the water. I couldn't get anything out of the water because I couldn't see. And once I had a snorkel on that other island, then I could bring in some clams. I got some crabs, and I tried to get a lobster. I tried to get a couple fish. I wasn't very successful with them. They're fast. But but at least I brought in some more food. And Ty knew there were some things that we had. And we also, you know, because of the merge and reward challenges, they had some spices and pepper and stuff like that. We made some salt. We boiled down some salt water and made salt. So we actually had some flavors to cook with. So that was a lot of fun meeting Ty and getting close with Ty and being providers together. And Jason obviously helped out as well. But, you know, the thing about Ty thus far in the game is it seems that people just like him enough to keep him around. But if you think back, Anna wanted to get rid of him. She didn't trust him. Michelle was saying she didn't trust him. Julia, I think, was, I can't remember if she said on air that she didn't trust him. But, you know, those were the people that were around him longest, but he's still there. So, yeah, he's doing something right.
So did you, again, going back to the whole editing part, we're talking with Scott Pollard here in the Garage Door podcast here. Scott, did you, so when that happened and he didn't share the idol with you to make the super idol, was that genuine surprise on your face? Like, what the hell just happened? Or you were just going, it's a TV show, I'm rolling with it?
Oh, I was shocked. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I rolled with it because I knew that at some point there was a good percentage of chances that I wasn't going to win it all. But at the same time, you know, the lower, more people get voted out, the higher your chances of actually having a chance to win. So it was genuine shock. The guy, he totally blindsided me. And as I found out, he voted against me. And that was one thing, you know, I even messed up in one of my post-game interviews and said, you know, if Ty had given me the idol, you know, everything would have been okay. But it would have caused him a tie because he voted for me out. If he had voted for Aubrey, then there would not have been a tie. And this gets into, you know, survivor
right.
numbers and
stuff. Yeah.
Bottom line is, if he had gone to plan, Aubrey would have gone home. But by voting for me, he had no choice to give me the idol because then he would have tied with Aubrey and maybe he goes home.
Wow.
So he kind of painted, you know, he knew he was going to do this because he voted for me. So it wasn't a last minute decision, but, you know, we'll see how it plays out for him. But up to this point, like I said, people that knew Ty the longest didn't trust him, but at the same time, he was a great guy to be around and wasn't causing a lot of trouble. Other than putting a fire out in the middle of the night at one time, but nobody really knew that was him. So, you know, he's a good dude. I like Ty.
See, I would still like to, the one thing I would change, or not change, but you know, they're always talking about making little tweaks. And I love the idea of the super idol. I was thinking about this. It would be interesting to me with the jury that you guys, when you're sitting there, you get a vote combined. You kind of get together and decide who you want to vote off. And then you get to cast a vote as a group each week.
You know, that's not a bad idea for a future season. I think, I think that's a pretty good idea. That's not a bad idea. That's something that wouldn't be completely out of the realm of possibility, you know, maybe in the future.
Yeah, because it would give you a whole different angle and you know, just to hear you guys deliberate behind the scenes trying to figure out who you want to vote off when you get there. And then you announce that. So I don't want to keep it too long. So I promise you a certain amount of time, but I do want to ask you before I let you go. By the way, on Twitter, you're a great follow at Scott S-C-O-T Pollard 31. In Detroit, we finally made the playoffs for the first time in 7 years. And then I'm watching the Boston Celtics, which you won a title with them in 2008. And I'm watching the Celtics team evolve. They are tough and gritty, and they are fighting the Hawks tooth and nail. And I thought the Pistons, they got swept. Started to show something in that Cleveland series. Maybe they didn't have enough guns for that fight, but at least they showed some heart, which maybe they haven't shown. Are you seeing the same things I am, or are we just being Detroit slappies?
Well, I can honestly tell you I didn't watch a whole lot of that Detroit series, but having watched them throughout the season on occasion, I'm not disagreeing with you. I do think they need some personnel changes. I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's you know, talent in the locker room or whatever, but it seems like they're a little bit away. They're obviously good enough to compete to get into the playoffs, but I don't see championship on this current roster as it stands, and I don't know what is missing. With Boston, they've got a great coach. He's an amazing person. I really, really like him. I got to know him a little bit here from him being a Butler, and it's showing. It's showing that his team is scrapping. They're outgunned. I don't think they have the talent to compete, but they are, as you said, and they're getting it done. So that is coaching, in my opinion. That is a team that believes in their coach. They believe in the system, whether they're getting all the shots or none of the shots or some of the shots on any given night. That means that you have faith in your coach when you don't have internal turmoil on a team that isn't loaded with talent, like the Boston Celtics, in my opinion, are not loaded with talent. They're scrapping, they're fighting, and that means they believe. And that's coaching. That starts at the top. You don't get that attitude, you don't get that kind of play from a team that's at the talent level of the Boston Celtics without them believing in the system and the coaching.
What was your free throw percentage in the league?
Overall, around 70%.
Okay, so can the Pistons ever move forward with a guy who shoots under 50% that you can't have on the floor for the final 2 minutes?
Well, you know, there's rumors that Will Chamberlain didn't play the last couple minutes of the game or didn't want the ball because he couldn't shoot free throws. There was Shaquille O'Neal that won a few championships, and he didn't shoot very well from the free throw line. But, you know, sometimes he made them when he counted. There was a game six in the Western Conference Finals in 2002. He made 13 of 15. So there's going to be freak games, I guess, that where players can average 50% from the free throw line, and all of a sudden they're gonna shoot better. But if he gives you everything else, which he does, I mean, the guy's a double-double machine. You got to keep him on the court.
Good.
And just because putting him on the free throw line in the last few minutes of the game is a liability, maybe he hits one once in a while. Maybe he hits two once in a while, just on a fluke. So I think the goods far outweigh the bads. I really don't understand why anybody shoots less than 50% from the free throw line. And to me, it's mechanics. Are far lower priority than mental. It's literally just focus and practice. Shoot 100 a day, and you're going to make 60%. You're going to make at least 60%. I swear I could teach anybody in the world to shoot 60% from the free throw line.
Scott, that was fun, man. Thank you so much for taking time out. And congrats to you and the family on the birth on Friday, right? You guys are going in to do the C-section and all that good stuff?
Yes, sir. Thanks a lot for having me. I'll come on anytime, man.
Hey, man, you and Jason, get up here for Woodward. We'll go get a caddy and we'll go cruise. Go grab a burger.
You know what? I got to stick it in here. I have a car up in Detroit right now that is being finished off. It's Mob Steel. They're based out there in Brighton.
Yeah, they are.
Yep. And they built me a car a few years ago, and some things needed some tweaking. It's been in the shop, and it doesn't have a top at all. It's a 64 Continental Mob Steel edition. And we call it untouchable because it took a while to build it. And I kept saying, when's my car going to be done? It's untouchable, man. So it's that was the response from Adam and the gang. But Adam Janai has absolutely built me a masterpiece. I've put a couple pictures of it on my Twitter page here and there. But if you go to Mob Steel, they've got some pictures of it on their website. And those guys are just kicking butt. They got a TV show. But anyway, it's nearing completion, and he's going to be delivering it down here. But maybe one day I'll drive it back up there, and we'll go drive cruise up and down Woodward, because I'd love to do that. I would love to be a part of that cruise.
Come on, we'll get it done. Scott, all the best to you. Continued success, and I loved you this season on Survivor. You made it a lot more fun to watch, because I really don't like about half the people on the show. So thanks, Scott.
All right, thanks for
having me. See you, bud. Bye.